When an idea lives far beyond its birthplace, it transforms into something legendary. Here we call this the Chief's Kingdom, the expanse of those that define the Chief's spirit. Anchored smack dab in the middle of the United States, this kingdom has no earthly boundaries. From its Midwestern roots, it grows. It covers plains and deserts, rolls over seas and mountains, and rushes right into our hearts. It spans generations, races, creeds, until it finally touches the rugged landscape of our hopes and dreams. This kingdom was not built on stone or mortar, no. It was modeled on the stories of sport and valor. And each year, new chapters are etched into this never-ending saga. 20, 15, 10. Touchdown! And although there is one special place called home, wherever you hear the thunder of red and gold, wherever a hero is remembered, or another one born, wherever the will of people give life to the game, welcome, neighbor. You're in the Chief's Kingdom.
The very first thing I remember was walking out of my office and turning and seeing a TV screen and seeing what was going on in New York.
I couldn't believe it. No one could believe it. You know, I said, what are you talking about? You know, the airplane went into the Twin Towers in New York.
My mind just started to go through all kinds of thoughts. But I realized this was not going to be any other week.
And then all of a sudden, I see this airplane on the screen fly in to the side of the building, and there's an explosion. And again, it thought, well, this can't be true.
You know, I was just in a daze in that particular situation, like most of the Americans.
We did, there in the Pentagon, what everybody around the country, here in Kansas City and everywhere, were doing, and it's turning on TVs or turning on the radio or getting that phone call that was alerting the nation to what was going on in New York. That little voice in the back of my head that I'm sure so many people around the country had as well that said, you know, this doesn't smell right.
I was probably like everybody else. I thought maybe some small plane had gotten disoriented and crashed into the tower. But then I looked at it closer and I thought, no, it's too perfect. This looks contrived.
Shortly thereafter, we watched Flight 175 crash into the South Tower. And so we knew that this was going to be a tough day in our nation.
When I saw the second plane hit, I knew something was up. My heart froze. I just wondered, where are these planes headed?
My neighbor called and asked me if I had my TV on, and I said no, and she said, well, the Pentagon had been hit.
Our first thought was not in America. This doesn't happen in America. Well, it was happening in America.
I was watching as the Pentagon began to collapse. You're watching the building that you know your spouse is in just collapse. It was horrific.
When you know you're facing death, and you can't escape the source of that death, there's just no way to give you the gravity of what that battlefield feels like. You know, getting into the Pentagon is you know, the commute is sometimes rough in D.C. If not every day, it's rough. Got into the building at 6:30, and by 7 o'clock, I'm in uniform, ready to do my best for my boss. I was the military aide to the Deputy Assistant Chief of Staff for Installation Management. That's a nice big title for Chief Donut Getter, because Lieutenant Colonels in the Pentagon are just galley slaves. But I was an aide to a senior executive service officer, Jan Minnig, and my big boss was a two-star. And we went into Miss Minnig's office. I turned on the TV and saw the coverage of what was going on in New York, and you could see the North Tower with a huge gaping hole and the black smoke billowing out of it. And as large a hole as that is, beautiful clear day, the chances of this being a mechanical malfunction at just the precise moment after either takeoff or approach to land, I pray this is an accident, but that little voice is telling me it's not. I step out of the office and actually walk through what would collapse when Flight 77 makes impact with the building at 530 miles an hour.
To fire at an extreme explosion at the Pentagon this morning.
There's no way to describe for you the gravity of the terror, and that's the right word, of what it's like to be on fire in a building you're very familiar with, but you can no longer navigate because of the blackness. This was not a action-adventure movie. In fact, I've commanded a medium howitzer battery, been around tanks, and a lot of loud things in my military career. And this impact of Flight 77 was far louder. I am 15 to 20 yards from where the nose of the aircraft impacts the building from where I'm located. I felt the vacuum and the concussion and the blast. I was blown across the hallway. Was not rendered unconscious, but as I'm trying to get up, it's completely dark. I'd gone from a hallway that was well lit and, you know, air conditioned, and I was completely familiar with, to an earthly hell of fire and the smoke and the disorientation. And I screamed out in a very loud voice when I came to that realization that I was stepping over the line from no longer struggling to survive, but stepping over that line that says, okay, Lord, I got it. This is a horrible, ghastly way to be called into eternity. And in that moment, I screamed out, Jesus, I'm coming to see you. There was no Lord, save me from this calamity. It was the acceptance of the death. I knew I was dying. As I lay there on that floor, I'd done what we in the military are never trained to do. After screaming out to my Lord, I collapsed to the floor. I gave up, waited for that feeling of the soul departing the body, and thought about Mel and Matt that morning and how I'd said goodbye and how I wouldn't do so again, wouldn't see them again until eternity.
Well, our son Matthew and I, we were working on a science experiment that had actually worked, which they usually didn't, and we were so excited about it that we were going to leave it on the counter so Dad could see it that night when he got home. Flew to the TV and turned it on, and the first thing I saw when I turned it on was the Pentagon, with just flames coming out of every possible window. And then outside of it, I could see the helipad. And I had been at Brian's office a month or so before that to help him unpack boxes. And I sat at his desk watching it rain on the helipad right outside his window. So that gave me the perspective I needed to know that that was specifically his part of the building. This is an incredibly hopeless feeling, knowing that he was still in that building. I hadn't talked to him. I had no idea if he was out, if he was safe or anything. That was our morning, and it was hell.
The Lord had other things in mind that day, and a number of miracles would occur. And by the Lord's grace, I am honored to be able to tell you that I'm the only survivor in the E-ring at the crash site.
Chief's Kingdom is brought to you by Hy-Vee. Hy-Vee, where there's a helpful smile in every aisle. Bud Light, the sure sign of a good time. Here we go. And the University of Kansas Hospital, the official healthcare provider of the Chiefs.
Trust me, we hear you. Just keep yelling. You know, no matter what the score is, keep yelling. We hear you. Just that loud, that roar, it amps us up. You through the TV, we hear you too. You see it, when the offense can't get the cadence and they can't snap the ball. I mean, it just amps us up to make an interception, make a big hit on the field. Together is powerful. I mean, we're changing the game.
The horrific events of 9/11 are often recounted as a whole, a single body of suffering, created from thousands of stories. For Lieutenant Colonel Brian Birdwell, as it is for all heroes, there was much more to overcome.
Life in a burn unit is ghastly. What has to be done to you to survive, to make you better, is worse than the burn itself. And Mel drugged me through it, she says. Sometimes she may tell you she didn't drag me through it, she nagged me through it sometimes, so.
Like bandages, the outpouring of love and care began to heal Lieutenant Colonel Brian Birdwell's wounds, both physical and mental. Brian realized he wasn't alone. A kingdom was listening.
When the Chiefs fans found out what Lieutenant Colonel Birdwell had gone through and the hero that he had become,
They responded as if he was a member of their immediate family. But that's what Chiefs fans do.
Then the mail started coming, and it was, I would get like four and five of those huge Postal Service tubs of mails, letters and packages every day, just everyday people saying, we're praying for you, we're sorry this happened to you.
And I remember when I came out of intensive care, one day Mel brought up buckets of mail and showed me the jersey and a helmet and things that people had sent, that very valuable items. One gentleman sent a helmet that had both Lynn Dawson and Joe Montana's autographs on the top.
Holy smokes, people are sending these things that have so much meaning to them, because this was an attack on our entire country, and it was something they could do to reach out to help someone.
The Washington Hospital Center got a phone put in my room that was voice activated that you could answer, and they did this because a very special person was going to call. Well, the guy who the guy who calls to test it is Lenny Dawson.
Well, Lieutenant Birdwell, I got the word that he had been involved in the 9/11 and was burned seriously, I mean real seriously, and he was a Chiefs fan, and so somebody got word to me about his situation, that he was a great Chiefs fan. He was suffering at that particular time and asked if I would call, and I said absolutely call him. And
I did not recognize his voice at first, because he said first, this is Leonard Dawson.
Leonard who?
And I didn't put Leonard together the way I should have.
That is my name. My name is Leonard.
But I got to talk with Lenny on the phone for about 10 minutes.
That was probably the insight into, you know, this has really taken on a life of its own.
Listen, I love Chiefs fans. I love when they get excited at a football game. But there's some instances where they go way beyond football. And the way they responded to Brian Birdwell and his cry for help was, to me, amazing.
That's when we decided to do something.
The Chiefs came out to Washington, D.C. and presented a big banner to Mel and Matt in the hospital.
Hundreds and hundreds of Chiefs fans that had gone to the stadium and signed it, or to different sporting events around town, you know, shows or whatever, where they'd come and sign this banner for somebody they didn't know.
But Errol Mann put together that, getting everybody to sign that.
First of all, we thought we'd just have signatures, but people would start writing interesting things to him. And it just kind of took off. Obviously, he had his family, but he also had the Chiefs family.
I don't think there's another team in the NFL that's got fans like the Chiefs have, because it was amazing, overwhelming.
I pull up to the game, and all I smell is barbecue. I see everybody with their jerseys on, just out tailgating. Everybody's yelling, honking their horns in their cars, offering me barbecue on the way before the game. I mean, everybody's just friendly. I mean, it's just a wonderful city to play football in, man. Our fans are good in the stadium and out of the stadium. They just treat everybody with respect, and you gotta love that. This city is built like a family. This is a great place to be, and I love it.
The Kansas City Chiefs franchise, like 9/11 attack survivor Lieutenant Colonel Brian Birdwell, was a throwback of sorts. Both Brian and his beloved Chiefs were forged out of determination. They both shared a love for their home state of Texas, and they were torn from the pages of simple Americana. It's as if these two were meant to be together right from the start.
Cheer the Zing Team of pro football, the dazzling Dallas Texans. Join the yell for the AFL and the roaring, scoring Texans.
Born in 1961 in Fort Worth, Texas, and of course the Chiefs were the Dallas Texans that year. Dad grew up liking them, and I grew up liking them, you know, the color red and the arrowhead, you know, pretty neat uniform as a kid, you know, all that's cool. And my mom, in fact, she loves to sew and make quilted items, pillows, things like that. I've got a little stuffed Kansas City Chiefs, little stuffed football that she made for me that's red and white panels with red lettering on it. And it's in my Chiefs room. It's very delicate because it was made 38, 39 years, almost 40 years ago, I guess, for me. And graduated from high school and college down in Texas, went into the military, was commissioned in 1984 when I graduated from college, and spent many years around the world and, of course, in the United States. And on three different occasions, was stationed in Kansas, twice at Leavenworth, once at Fort Riley. And in fact, our years at Riley were the years just before Marty Schottenheimer came in to be the coach. You didn't really have to sway anybody at Leavenworth to be Chiefs fans. So I grew up a Chiefs fan, and I've not departed from it.
Yeah. There are a lot of people who say that they're fans, and then there are fans like him. That, you know, it's the Kansas City Chiefs against the world.
We want not just a frontal assault. We want pursuit and exploitation. I want to beat teams like the dogs that they are.
Somebody starts talking to me like that about the teams that we compete against and their dislike for them, then you know that person is a real fan.
Lieutenant Colonel Birdwell has come into our booth. He's been there a couple different times during a broadcast. And he's one of those nutbag fans.
I think he had his uniform on, too. Can you imagine that, having a uniform on with all the birds that they've had? But it was his attitude that got to me. How positive it was and how much of a military person that he was at that time. I played professional football for 19 years, and I've seen a lot of tough guys. No one was tougher than him.
It's just fun being a Chiefs fan. There's nothing like tailgating here. You know, it's mid-America, heart of America.
How could you not be a Chiefs fan? I mean, what other team is it?
It's just been great to be a part of the Chiefs and their fan base.
Brian's love of his boyhood team was not only magnified through the 9/11 attacks and its aftermath, that love was returned, paid forward by the Chiefs and their love for this country and those who proudly serve it.
The capacity for sacrifice, that's what I think about. And the way the Chiefs were part of that, not just for me, but so many veterans in the times that I've been back to Arrowhead, whether it's as an invited guest or a fan in the stands, and they're always honoring somebody that's wearing the uniform, whether it's from Riley or, you know, Whiteman or wherever it may be. The Chiefs get it like so many other men and women get it. Veterans get a welcome, they get a thank you, they get a well done, and they get a just honor in returning home. The phrase freedom isn't free can sound almost trite, but for every man or woman that's put on that uniform and then been prepared to, it's very special. If you remember John Wayne's final movie, The Shootist, he's given Ron Howard that shooting lesson. He said, most men, regardless of cause or need, aren't willing. They blink an eye or draw a breath before they pull that trigger. I won't. And the men and women that put on the uniform of this nation and respond to the call that went out after September 11th, or the call that went out in the first Gulf War, or Vietnam, or Panama, or Grenada, or Korea, or World War II, every generation of Americans that have put on that uniform, it's not whether you got a Purple Heart or not, it's that you were willing to earn one by virtue of your service.
Together is powerful. That's something I preach to the team, because I know that with a team, a lot can be accomplished, much more so than just an individual trying to get things done. In this game of football, it's a team game. And so the offense, the defense, the special teams, and the fans, they all pull together to help win the ball game.
Chiefs Kingdom is brought to you by Hy-Vee. Hy-Vee, where there's a helpful smile in every aisle. Bud Light, the sure sign of a good time. Here we go. And the University of Kansas Hospital, the official healthcare provider of the Chiefs. The Chiefs Kingdom is a symphony of moments, images, connections, and each snapshot tells a story and her adventure. Playing at Arrowhead Stadium can be tough for opposing teams. But on the first football Sunday since 9/11, the Chiefs Kingdom rose to its feet to cheer the visiting New York Giants. Their support didn't stop with a standing ovation. Fans passed a fireman's boot around Arrowhead, collecting over $220,000 in donations for relief efforts. The Chiefs matched that mark for a grand donation of over $450,000, the largest single-day outpouring of support by a group of fans ever.
There's no stadium like Arrowhead on game day, but it was different on that day. And I promise you, every person in that stadium that day said, "Home of the Brave," rather than "Home of the Chiefs" at the end of the national anthem.
Next, on Chiefs Kingdom.
You walk into my house, you think you're walking into a Chiefs museum. You'd have thought I had a career with them. I got cut so many times. I used to joke that I had a gold travel card from Greyhound. But the bottom line is, he told me to my face, he said, "Son, you are not a football player." But Hank Stram also gave me direction for what was to be my life's work.
Toss power trap.